Hi everyone, it's Bill Black, the Exit Coach from the Exit Coach Radio Show. You know, one of the biggest questions I get on the show is, what exactly goes into a business exit plan, and when should I start creating mine? Well, I always tell people that the best time to start was 5 years ago, but the next best time is now because you never know when you might need it. So we put together a free report that describes what an exit plan is and what you should know. You can get it free by texting EXIT PLAN with no spaces to 44222. That's EXIT PLAN to 44222. Again, text EXIT PLAN to 44222.
Welcome to the Exit Coach Radio Show, the show for baby boomer business owners who are looking for cutting-edge information as they plan their 3 to 10 year business succession and exit. Every week, we interview top professional advisors for their best tips, strategies, and precautions so you can be well-planned. And now, here's your host, the Exit Coach, Bill Black.
Well, hey, everyone. Thanks so much for joining me today. Always a pleasure to have you with me. You know, we cover a wide variety of topics here at Exit Coach Radio to help you prepare for the day when you are, you know, getting ready to exit your business and start whatever new chapter of life comes along. And today we're going to talk with Ashley Michikay of True North Retirement Advisors, and she's going to talk to us about how to exit your business with financial security. So without further ado, Ashley, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining me today.
Thanks, Bill. It's a pleasure to be here.
My pleasure. So tell me, you are, where are you located? Where's your firm located? Oregon, right?
We're just outside of Portland, Oregon.
Excellent. So, you know, it's no different up there than it is everywhere else in the U.S. and several other parts of the country. There's a lot of baby boomers saying, you know, in the next 5 years or so, I want to start figuring out how I can do something different. And, you know, a big problem with that is they have the business that they have to monetize and divest of. And, you know, they may be able to sell it to an outsider, but maybe not. So tell us about what you all do there at True North Retirement Advisors and how you got into the business.
Sure. So we specialize in retirement and exit planning for business owner clients. And how that kind of started, I joined my father straight out of college 12 years ago as sort of a generalist financial advisor. So he had always been working primarily with a lot of business owners, but mostly helping them manage their investments and doing some financial planning work. And then when I joined him, pretty quickly, I would say within the first year, year and a half, I actually kind of stumbled into a 401k plan. And through that, I realized how much I love both working with the employees and working with business owners. And so I carved out a niche for myself in 401k plans and consulting on those. And through that, I started working with a lot of small business owners. And in a 401k plan in a small business, most of the time my primary contact was the business owner. And so we would inevitably have conversations about their own retirement. And I would find, probably much like you have, is that they hadn't really done a whole lot to prepare themselves or their business for their exit. And then about 7 years ago, I had a client suddenly die of a heart attack, and his third generation family business, I kind of watched from the sidelines as it crumbled and fell apart, and his long-term employees, you know, didn't have anywhere to go, and it was just his wife came in and was running the business, and she hadn't had any prior experience being a business owner and running that, and she was stressed out. I mean, it was just a mess. And so that was a real wake-up call for me. Like, I need to start talking more and more to my clients about this because for a business owner, as you know, their business, a lot of their net worth is tied up into it, and they just don't really know how to navigate the many steps depending on what that transition timeline looks like. And so there's just lots of planning that goes into it. And given my background, I thought, well, this is something that I really enjoy doing. I love working with business owners. It's a complex problem to solve, so there's never a boring day.
Right.
And so that's kind of how that was sort of the fork in the road. And so about 7 years ago, I really started to focus in on this a lot more and incorporate the exit planning into the core of our practice. And now it's a real area of focus. I still do the 401k plans and the retirement plans, and we still do investment management and financial planning, but we've sort of folded in the exit plan because it's such an important and needed service for business owners that a lot of people out there just don't fulfill for the business owner clients.
Yeah, that's a great, great story and a real indication of, you know, seeing a huge need and a complicated area of practice. As you mentioned, there are a lot of moving parts. There are tax, legal, financial, and operational strategies that need to get coordinated and implemented. But first, it starts with just sitting down with the owner and understanding where they think they want to go and what they have and will it all work, right? Is that how you usually start with goal setting and discovering, you know, what resources do you have, what's your business worth, that type of thing?
Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, actually where I like to start is helping the business owner understand what their business is worth and figuring out the value of the business. And then we have more information to really dive into their objectives and goals and their timeline. And, you know, if they think that the business is worth $2 million and it's worth $500,000, then that's going to sort of shape some of the things that we discuss when we're looking at doing the initial assessment and figuring out where they're at, where they want to go, what they've done so far, what they need to do. So I love starting with the business valuation. And what's neat about it, too, is that business owners who are even a little bit further out, say, you know, 10, 15 years or more from exit, that's something that's relevant to them. And so I think it's just a great way to start a conversation with a business owner and you know, get them interested in the exit planning process and see how essential it is to plan ahead. Because as you mentioned in the intro of your podcast, it's so true. Like, people wait, they procrastinate, and then they're like, yep, I wanted to exit yesterday. And it's like, well, we should have been talking five years ago. And so valuing the business is that critical, just initial step that I like to take with clients.
And you said something in there that you even laughed at it, but it is funny. But with the business owner thinks their business is worth three or four times what a buyer will pay. Do you find that to be a common occurrence? Is that a standard situation? Because it is with me. I mean, it is down here in California. So is it there in Oregon as well?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a general optimism among business owners.
Good
which,
point. Good way
which
to put
a,
it. Good way.
But, you know, if you're overly, I don't know a lot of business owners or entrepreneurs who are pessimists. So it's kind of a character trait of the business owner community in general, I think, which is a good thing. Like, you need to be optimistic in order to, I think, successfully grow and maintain your business. But yeah, that optimism kind of carries over into the valuation of the business. But you know, there's a lot of business. I just did one for a potential client the other day, and he's like, "Oh wow, I wasn't guessing that." And his numbers that we used to enter the data, like, I think it's a pretty accurate estimate what we came up with. And so, you know, and then now he has some clarity around, okay, the business is worth this, but does he need it to be worth more than that? Is that, you know, what, so then we can kind of decide where to go from there, whether or not the value needs to grow substantially or not.
Right. Yeah. So the owner at that point needs to grow their way out of their business. And it's a really good point. You know, a lot of times it helps put it in perspective if you are to say, like, well, let's assume that you're buying your business, but you're also looking at nine other businesses just like this one, just like your business. What would you pay for it, and why would you pay top dollar, you know, your assumed value? So it's a real wake-up call for a lot of owners. And like you say, that helps frame the work moving forward as to, well, you know, while we're doing this other stuff, getting your business ready and making sure that if you have the heart attack, that your family doesn't come up short, then while we're doing all that, you need to focus on growing your business and maybe running it a little differently, preparing it for down the road. So all great stuff.
Right.
Now let me ask you a question, Ashley. Many business owners have a hard time taking a step back from the day-to-day operations of their business to start planning their exit. How can they begin to focus on their exit without things falling apart in their business?
Yeah, that's a great question. And the key is hiring outside help for that, so assembling a team. So it's probably going to, at a minimum, be, you know, someone like you or I, an exit planner is going to quarterback that process, but also a CPA, an attorney. You might need multiple attorneys based on what you're trying to accomplish. But that's the key, because if business owners try to do it themselves, it really takes them away and outside of running the day-to-day operations of their business, and they really can't afford to do that, especially if they want to get top dollar for their business, or they need to sell it, or you know, they need to get a certain price for it. So that's the key, is having some experts involved who've done this before, who understand the process, who can help them and guide them so that yes, there will be some time that's taken away from the business and in making decisions and meeting with, you know, your CPA and stuff, but it shouldn't be this overwhelming, time-consuming process. It doesn't have to be if you hire outside help.
That's a really good answer. And, you know, a lot of people that I talk to say, well, can't my CPA just coordinate the project? And I'll ask them, well, you know, have you ever tried to talk to your CPA during tax time? You know, things need to get done all year long here. But here's the bigger question is, you know, it's like a construction project. You're going to have different disciplines working on this project. But you wouldn't dream of starting a custom house project without first having talk to an architect to develop a blueprint, right? So you need to have that blueprint put together so that everybody knows what their work's going to be to coordinate this complicated project.
Mm-hmm.
So great answer there. So let me ask you one more question. What is the first step that a business owner should take when they wake up one day and decide, you know, I want to get out of this business, and how soon should they take it?
Yeah, I go back to the valuation. So figuring out what your business is worth is, in my opinion, that's the best first step, because it provides so much clarity. And so what we've done for our clients, we've partnered with a valuation service where it's a really robust software tool. It's a database of over 50 million businesses. So no matter what kind of industry you're in or business you're in, you're going to be able to have good comparative data when valuing your business. So, and then what I did over a couple years ago is I talked to several valuation experts around the country, and I said, business owners don't have time to pay someone $10,000 or $20,000 to value their business. They don't have time to go back and get 3 years worth of books and records and you know, financial data. What is the bare minimum in terms of information that a business owner would need to value their business? And what I compiled was 8 pieces of information, really high-level stuff. It's revenue, pre-tax income, accounts receivable, bank loans, whether you rent or own the business building where you operate out of. So these are all things that most business owners, unless their financials are a complete mess, in which case you have that's a whole other can of worms, but you can get this data, and it once you have that, it takes about 5 to 10 minutes to enter the data to get a really accurate estimate of value. And then there, that's the starting point, and then we can kind of go from there and say, okay, well, do we need to grow the value? What do we need to do next? And then we can focus in on the objectives and goals and going through that initial process.
That's great. And that really, you're right. A lot of people, the thing that stops them, that holds them back, is that, you know, they hear a business valuation costs $10,000 or more, and they're like, wow, I'd really rather use that on planning than on creating a number that's just for planning, right? So,
right.
You know, we all know that if you need to send a valuation into the IRS for any reason, it needs to be a certified bona fide valuation. But otherwise, a lot of these estimates that are out there can do the job of getting you at least in the ballpark for a lot lower price point. So that's a great service that you provide. Now, when you get into the exit planning itself, and again, we talked about, well, you probably should be doing it well in advance. How far in advance? What's the best time to start?
Yeah, I mean, it's different for every business owner and what their exit path looks like. You know, if you're trying to, I think a longer runway for exit is definitely if you're trying to groom a younger owner. Maybe it's like a child. You know, I'm a second generation owner in this business, and so it takes a while. When I was 22 years old and joined my dad, I definitely was not ready to become a business owner and make those decisions and run things. So you may need a longer time frame on an internal transfer. So it could be 10, 15 years that you're sort of navigating the exit process and putting the things in place, especially if you're trying to, you know, transfer the business and you want to extract value from that. You know, that's going to take time because a lot of younger owners, they don't have the financial means to just write you a big check.
Right.
So there's a gradual transition that a lot of times needs to happen with internal succession that can take, you know, 2, 3, 4 times as long as if you were just going to sell your business in a third-party transaction. So it's different, but, you know, I think it was Stephen Covey who originally said, begin with the end in mind. And so there are always things that business owners can do, even in the early stages of their business, but even when they're 10, 15 years out, I think that's a good time to start thinking about it and maybe taking some initial steps, like making sure that if something happens to you, like in the client of mine who had the heart attack, if something happens to you, what happens to your business? And making sure that your family is going to be okay, what do you want to have happen to you? That should be addressed much sooner than, you know, 2, 3, 4 years out from your exit. Making sure you have, you know, good employment agreements in place and your buy-sell agreement, if there are multiple owners. Like there's a lot of legal documentation. There's a lot of tax planning. There's a lot of insurance and business planning, financial planning. Like all these things can and should be addressed many, many years out, because then you're just going to give yourself a lot more breathing room rather than just this pressure to like, oh, I want to exit yesterday and I need to figure this out in the next 18 months or else it's all going to fall apart. And so then you get into this emergency type situation where you're not thinking clearly. And so planning ahead and is just, and you know this, so I'm speaking to the choir, preaching to the choir, but it's hard for a lot of people to do because they just, we're naturally procrastinators, most people are, and so it's just challenging to make it a priority when you're just got your head down running your business, but it is important to do some things, you know, 10, 15 years out or even longer.
Mm-hmm. Ashley, you may be preaching to the choir, but what you're saying is gospel. So I will tell you, any business owner that's hearing this information for the first time, Ashley is hitting it out of the park with her precautions and tips, because we want you owners to realize that there are a lot of things you may be doing. You know, and a lot of owners these days may say, you know what, I just turned 60. I don't feel 60. I think I'll keep doing this for a while longer. Well, now you're moving into a danger zone where anything might happen health-wise, and you need to have your business ready with a plan in case that happens. But Ashley, I don't know if you see the same stats that I do, but I see stats that say 9 out of 10 business owners that try to sell to an outside buyer end up either turning it over to an insider or closing down because the outside, they just weren't ready for the outside buyer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it can be a really draining process, and you got to have the energy for it. So, think for a lot of my clients, as they get close to retirement and, you know, they've been working 30, 40 years, a lot of times, and it can happen pretty quickly, their priorities tend to change. Like, especially if they have good financial security, they kind of don't see the point in, like, well, why am I killing myself and working 50, 60 hours a week? I don't want to do that anymore. Maybe they have grandchildren now that they want to see more often, and they're being pulled in different directions. So, and I see that with quite a few of my clients, but you know, my dad, he works full time still, but he likes to go down to your neck of the woods down in California for 3-4 months out of the year when it's raining and cold like it is here right now. So, and he wants to see his grandkids. The other day at lunch, he left the office, drove to McDonald's, got lunch for my son, and went and had lunch with my son at my house. Now, luckily, I live so close to our office, he was able to do that. But, you know, business owners, their priorities start to shift, and I see that a lot. And they just get burned out with the stress of running the business and managing people, and that's kind of what's really neat to see when they come out the other side, is they look healthier sometimes, you know,
like nine, twelve months
after, they're like, they're just like, you could tell, like, there's a physical weight that was lifted off their shoulders once they exit and retire. So it's fun to watch that. I really enjoy that aspect of it. But it's important to kind of know thyself and to see, okay, I'm sort of feeling pulled in this other direction now, and I better do something about my business before I just decide to put the key in the lock one last time and walk away because I've burned out and I'm just done.
Ashley Michikay from True North Retirement Advisors. Great, great tips and ideas. Thank you so much. I'm going to share with you listeners a website where you can find more about Ashley and True North Retirement Advisors. Are you ready? It's HTTP. We all know that one. TrueNorthRetirementAdvisors.com. And if you go to TrueNorthRetirementAdvisors.com, And after that, add a /valuemybusiness. They have a free checklist and business valuation tool that you can check out. I hope people will get in touch with you. Ashley, I really appreciate the time you've invested today with us, and I look forward to the next time we speak. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Bill.
Thank you very much for joining us today. It's always a pleasure to have you with us, and my next guest is Kathy Fetke from Real Wealth Network. She's the CEO and founder of the Real Wealth Network in Malibu, California, and we've had her on before, and it was an interesting, very valuable interview, and we've asked her to come back, and she's going to talk about real estate investments and her new book, Retire Rich in Rentals. Kathy, thank you so much for joining me once again today.
Oh, thanks for having me.
It's been a couple years since you've been on the show, but I still remember our last interview. It was terrific, and we got a lot of great comments. So thanks so much. Tell us, our listeners that weren't fortunate enough to hear that, about you and your background and how you came to start the Real Wealth Network.
Sure. Well, we are up to almost 50,000 members now, but it started with just me wanting kind of desperately to understand how to create passive income. I wanted to be a stay-at-home mom and not have to go away to work when my husband was diagnosed with melanoma. Now, he's healthy today, and everything's fine, but at the time, we didn't know. So I just went on a mission to understand, well, how do other people do this? I know that other people have invested in things like real estate and own the properties, and they generate cash flow, but do you need a lot of money, and how does the average person do it? So I have the Real Wealth Show. It's a podcast I've had for 15 years now, just radio back before podcasts. But I just use that as a platform to interview people who have done what I wanted to do. And I learned their secrets, and I continue to share it with my audience and put it into practice for myself and our members. And I can tell you it works.
Well, that's terrific. First things first, I'm glad to hear your husband is healthy. And secondly, congratulations on an incredible milestone of 50,000 members. That's terrific in your network. That's fantastic. So when you started your research on all of this, it sounds like you found that real estate outperforms other investments. How has your research supported that over the years?
Well, you know, it's a pretty broad term, right? There's investments. If you're an early investor in Google, well, that probably outperforms anything, right? So it depends on what we're
okay.
talking about.
Okay, fair enough.
And I had the opportunity to be an early investor. I just didn't know what it was, so I didn't do it. Can you believe that? Anyway, the thing about real estate is, you know, you can lose money in real estate as well, and lots of people do because they treat it like they treat other investments. You know, they've been mostly trained to have a financial advisor do the work for them, and they haven't really had to understand investment. So oftentimes mm-hmm. people get into real estate and treat it the same way, and somebody tells them to put their money in something, and they do it without research, and that doesn't turn out well. Trust me, that does not turn out well. I see scams every day from people who just didn't have the information. So let me be super clear that in real estate, you do need to know what you're doing. You do need education. Either that or you invest side by side with someone with an incredible track record of many, many, many decades. That's the only way I would do it if I didn't have the education. So I want to be super clear. You can make money or lose money in any investment. What I like about real estate is it's a little bit easier to understand because, you know, how are you going to dig into the financials of some, you know, mega corporation? That's impossible. But can you dig into the financials of real estate? Yeah. You know, you get an appraisal on the property. You get an inspection on the property. You find out what the property taxes are, the insurance. Like, it's not that hard. You just have to know how to do it and check off, you know, check the list of what needs to be done to protect yourself. And when you do those things, now you have your money secured into a hard asset that you can somewhat control versus, you know, other investments where you just really don't know what's going on.
Yeah, good point. It's, you know, at the end of the day, it's a pretty simple asset. It's, you know, there's things can happen inside of a property. Certainly if you have a rental and you have bad tenants, you can incur unnecessary expenses. But like you said, you know, either do your homework or hire a professor. I like that analogy there. So are tax benefits as good on income property as they are on a primary residence? Let's talk about that because we get that question a lot.
Oh, my gosh. No comparison. It's far better on investment property, especially with the new tax law. The new tax law almost discourages homeownership at a certain price point, and it really hasn't helped people. But if you have an investment property, the tax benefits got even better, and they were already good. So you can, you know, if you have an investment property, you can write off the maintenance of that property, the repairs, the visiting that property, your management. I mean, you know, talk to your CPA. Make sure you have a CPA that understands real estate, but you can get to a point where you have so many write-offs that you don't even pay any income on the income you get from those properties. Again, if you're doing it right. And we got this bonus depreciation for the tax cuts that you can write off so many things that are not fixed to the property. So if you've got a short-term rental, you might be able to write off all the furnishings in that. I mean, you know, again, talk to your CPA. But
right.
And then you have depreciation, which means you get to write down the value of the property every year, even though the value of the property could be going up. So the mm-hmm. benefits go on and on and on, whereas with a primary, what do you get? You get to write off your mortgage interest? Well, you get to do that with your investment property as well, but you really don't get to write off much else on your primary. So if you're buying real estate for the tax benefits, you really need to look at investments versus just, you know, I'm a big believer and owning your own home because I do believe, you know, you got to pay your rent somewhere. You got to pay someone. So why not pay off a home? You know, you got to live in 30 years. You're going to be really glad that you paid off a home versus renting in 30 years. I mean, imagine what rents will be in 30 years. But, you know, if you own it, you've got it paid off by then. But you're not getting much more benefit than that. But on investment property, you get the same. You got even better leverage. So you get all the tax benefits, but if you're renting it out, you've got someone else paying down your mortgage for you such that at some point you own that property free and clear too. So there's a lot of benefits. But again, don't rush out and go buy the property next door without knowing anything. You really got to at least read my book. It has a checklist in there to make sure that you protect yourself.
That sounds like a definite prerequisite for anything to do with the real estate is understanding that, you know, what the knowledge that's been collected by you and your network. So one of the questions that we hear a lot is that it's difficult, although interest rates are low, it's difficult to qualify for investment property loans over a primary residence. Is that true these days? How's the banking climate?
It's actually easier. It's actually easier to qualify for an investment property than a primary in many cases because you get to include the rental income in your income. And if you're buying the right kind of rental property, you're not buying the fanciest house on the block. You know, you might want to buy a house that you're going to live in that's nice, and it might be a little higher priced and wouldn't really make sense as a rental. But if you're buying a rental property, you're not the one living in that. So, you want it to be a nice property, but it might be half or a fourth or even a tenth the price of the property you'd live in. So, you know, for example, I'm in San Francisco. Our offices are in San Francisco and LA. You want to buy a starter home, you're going to be looking at $1 million. You know, if you want to buy a starter home in Atlanta or Florida, it's going to be $100,000. It's going to be one-tenth the price. So if you're going to buy a primary, imagine the mortgage on $1 million house. I mean, that's a lot. And trying to qualify for the mortgage for $1 million house, that's tough. But can you qualify for the mortgage of $100,000 house? Yes, it's about $500. And you get the county rental income. That's like, you know, could be as much as $900 or $1,000. I mean, you can much more easily qualify for investment property. So you can get 10 loans. You can get 10 conventional loans in your name for investment property. That's what you're allowed. And so if you've got 10 $100,000 homes, you could count the rental income on all those 10 homes versus trying to get that $1 million home for your primary that, you know, you just might not qualify for.
Well, that's great advice. And, you know, that was going to be my next question because I'm also a fellow Californian where, you know, real estate is it's just out of sight in a lot of places, especially in the Bay Area, like you're talking about in the San Francisco area. It's just crazy. But so geographic diversity, let's talk about that for a second. Would someone be better off looking to choose their area, let's say Austin, Texas, or like you mentioned, Atlanta or somewhere like that, and buy up in that and stay in one area, or should they have geographic diversity and spread it around?
It's a very good question, and I get that question all the time. Should you own rental property, or, you know, how do you even own property in California? You know, listen, if you're going to buy a house and live in it and live in it for 30 years and you're just going to stay in California because you love it, it might make sense to buy a property because you can get a primary residence with 3.5% down up to, I think it's 760,000 or something on the FHA max. So you can, you know, you might not get a big house, but if you got a duplex, you could even qualify for more. If you got a fourplex, you could, I think, go up over $1 million with still 3.5% down. But again, if you're going to live there for a long time and the numbers work and it's the same as rent, hey, why not? You know, why not live here? But that's hard to do, and you might not actually live where you want to live. So why not rent where you want to live and invest where the numbers really make sense? What we know right now is that there is a massive migration to the southeast, to Texas, to Georgia, to Florida, to Alabama. There's businesses moving there, massive, massive job growth, and along with it, population growth. And you've got 10,000 people turning 65 every single day for the next decade, and they're going to live somewhere where the climate is nice and there's lots to do and it's affordable. So we just see this massive demographic shift to the southeast. But the amazing thing is you can still buy a brand new rental home, a brand new home for under $200,000 and rent it out for, close to 1% of that purchase price. It's anywhere between 0.7 and 1% of the purchase price. You're not going to get that in California. So if you bought one rental property, again, let me just, in San Francisco, that's going to be $1 million, let's just say. Now you have
for a closet.
Now you have all your money in one property on a fault line in a very tenant-friendly place where if that person stops paying you or files bankruptcy, you're not going to see any rental income. You're going to be covering that debt on your own, and especially with the new rent control laws. It's tough. Or instead of that $1 million property, I mean, imagine if it was vacant 1 month, you're 100% vacant. What if it's 6 months? You're 100% vacant for 6 months carrying that mortgage and all the expenses. Or instead, you buy where the masses are going, and you follow the path of, or you get in front of the path of progress, buy 10 smaller properties. Now you're diversified. Mm-hmm. If you have a tenant that moves out, or you've got a vacancy or an eviction on one or even two or even three of those 10 properties, let's say you're vacant on 50%, five of the 10 are vacant, you're still better off than that one San Francisco property or LA property that's vacant. So there's mm-hmm. way more protection by diversifying, and that's what I just dedicate my life to, showing people options. Like, you're not stuck with having to invest where you live. There's so much technology today that makes it possible and pretty easy to invest out of state. You can have very experienced property management companies watching over that property, leasing it out, checking in on the tenant for you. Just like any business, you're not going to be the one sweeping the floors and, necessarily, or, doing the janitorial work, or, so why should you be the one fixing toilets? That's ridiculous. This is a real estate's a business, and you hire people to do those things. And one of those people you hire is a property manager to take care of it. So it really doesn't matter where it's located if someone else is managing it for you, right?
No, good point. Very good point. So many people who tried to be real estate investors lost their properties in the 2008 recession. What did they do wrong, part one? And number two, where are we on the economic cycle wheel, in your opinion, right now? Are we heading for another recession that will impact real estate?
Oh, so good. Yes, I would say 10 years ago, it's not all that different today. We had a big boom in 2006. We have a big boom today. The big difference is that the people who own property today, they had to qualify for it. They had to prove that they make enough money to own it and that they have enough reserves set aside for it, and they had a down payment. It's all honest loans. They locked in low rates. Values have gone up. They've got equity. Now, go back to 2006, before everything blew up, people were lying on their loans. They didn't put money down. They didn't know what they were doing. They didn't have any reserves set aside. They were putting, you could get a property with a zero money down, get 100% loan, and in some cases up to 110%. So you'd buy the property and get money back. It was nuts. So really
right.
Poor lending, higher rates, no equity, no cash flow. It's just not sustainable. But today, again, people are sitting with equity in their homes. They've got low payments. If they left their property, they would be paying more to rent. So, we're just not going to see a foreclosure crisis. Foreclosures are at historic lows. We've got wage growth, job growth. We've got household growth. The population in the U.S. has grown by 25 million since that last recession. So what we don't have is a lot of inventory. We don't have the housing. So we've got all this growth and yet not the supply. So
mm-hmm.
I don't see a recession in housing coming anytime soon. I'm hearing that we're not going to even have a supply-demand equilibrium until about 2024. So we have another 4 or 5 years before there's even enough housing to go around, that builders can jump in and start building. But even if they do, even if builders sort of get up and running again and building, they cannot build what people need, which is a property they can afford to live in, because permit
mm-hmm.
fees have gone
mm-hmm.
up, and costs have gone up to build, and labor costs have gone up, and material costs. It's really hard to build a property that, the average person can afford. So even as more supply comes on, it's not going to be the stuff we need. So if you can somehow manage to get into, to buy an older home and fix it up, or work with a builder to build, cheaper, there is going to be tremendous demand for that for the next decade. And that's exactly what we've done at Real Wealth Network, is found teams across the country who can do that for us and for our members. They find the properties, fix them up, get a tenant in place, put the property management in place, and make basically a turnkey rental property for people who live out of state.
Brilliant, brilliant, brilliant. So what advice would you have for people that are new to real estate investing, Kathy?
First and foremost, don't trust anyone. I mean that. I hate to say it. I see too many people lose money. There's a lot of sharks. There's a lot of sharks. Anytime there's money, it's like blood in the ocean, right? I was like, the sharks come. So, you know, there's a lot of money in real estate, and there's a lot of people out there who are happy to take advantage of you. I like to compare
good
it
advice.
To,
very good advice.
Mm-hmm. I like to compare it to when I went to Costa Rica and I forgot to look at the exchange rate. I went to buy lunch and I handed money over and had no idea what I got back and didn't know how to count it. And I knew I got ripped off, but I didn't know how or what. So you just have to do, all you have to do is get off the airplane and figure out the exchange rate. So it's the same thing with real estate. There's just some basic things you need to know, really basic, not hard. I mean, it's maybe 10 things on the checklist that you just have to make sure you do to make sure that you're protected. And so many people don't do it. It's just amazing. So again, in my book, Retire Rich with Rentals, I have that checklist to make sure you get your appraisals, get your inspections, make sure your money goes to a title company and not to someone's personal address. You know, I mean, it goes on and on, just basic things that people forget to do. That would be number one, just get the basics, learn before you jump
go
in.
To school on this, right? Go to school on this, treat it like it's as important as it's going to be in your life. And read books, join networks, get information from people who've been there before. So your book is called Retire Rich in Rentals, available on Amazon. And the network is really simple, realwealthnetwork.com. Why wouldn't you check all that out? It's a very, very good investment, Kathy. You talk about this so eloquently, as you know, with your experience. And again, you started this out of necessity. That's what's such an interesting story. But it turned into a real passion of yours. I can hear it from you that you're very passionate about helping people understand what you've learned along the way. And it's fantastic to have you back on the show. I really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you so much. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, I'm always interested in this topic, and I hope our listeners again will buy Retire Rich in Rentals on Amazon and visit your network at realwealthnetwork.com. And Kathy, with regards to the economic trends, like we said, there's people moving. There are people finishing college, getting good jobs, moving to certain areas of the country, looking for certain types of homes. Our listeners will find all of that information collected and easy to find in your book and on your network, and they should do so as quickly as possible. I hope you can come back on and keep us updated in the next maybe few months and let us know how it's going with all of that.
Oh, I'd be happy to. Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks so much for joining me. We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back after this.
You're listening to one of many shows on ExitCoachRadio.com. We're interviewing advisors, authors, and thought leaders for their best tips, ideas, and precautions so you can be well-planned. If you'd like to be a guest on any of our shows, go to guest.ExitCoachRadio.com. ExitCoachRadio.com. Come listen for a minute.
You're listening to ExitCoachRadio.com, the information station for age 50-plus business owners, where we're interviewing top advisors for their best tips, ideas, and precautions so you can be well-planned. We upload new one-minute tips every day. ExitCoachRadio.com. Come listen for a minute.
And now the Exit Coach Radio Show proudly presents the All-Star Review, a compilation of one-minute highlights from past guests. Hear more one-minute highlights and full interviews from these guests at ExitCoachRadio.com.
When your business value is wrapped up in your client list, what's the most important thing you can do to drive the value of your business? We asked expert Stacy McKibben.
If you don't have really strong, you know, client relation management tools, CRMs, as they're lovingly referred to, if you don't have tools like that in your business, it's going to be very difficult to transition it over. As a matter of fact, your next buyer is going to use that as a reason to drive down your sale price.
Hey,
absolutely, one of the biggest areas of opportunity that we see in professional services businesses are going back to your existing and previous clients. Oftentimes, we just forget that they don't necessarily know the full breadth of services that we provide and how they can use us or even refer us to their friends and family. So that is a big win in most businesses, is just starting there. And it's very difficult to do if you don't have a good system in place with which to do it.
One of the most common ways a business is sold is through something called an earnout. And we asked for information and an example from business broker Chris Bond.
What buyers want to have happen is they want a seller to prove the actual value of the business by having them be patient and waiting for a piece of the payout. So in other words, once the transition period has happened, say 6, 12, 18, or 24 months, the buyer will make additional payments with the comfort that, okay, it is what you said it is. Had a very creative deal earlier this year where down payment was made for about 80% of the deal. A bank stepped in for a percentage of the deal. The seller actually financed another small percentage of the deal. And the earnout comes in years 3, 4, and 5. So everybody's pulling in the same direction, making sure the first 2 years go very smoothly.
What are some of the challenges for leaders in this knowledge-based economy? Here's CEO Coach Bill Anton.
The person that has the most influence over the entire organization is the person that leads the organization. And transforming that person exponentially influences change. My training as a psychologist, my understanding about the kinds of organizations that are going to be successful in the future are going to be organizations that realize that knowledge is their product and that knowledge can only be created by enrollment, not by compliance. And so the task of the leader of the future is to transform the people that work in the organization so that they want to give their best and so that they're willing to offer ideas and perspectives that create knowledge and innovation for the organization.
Medical insurance is a big part of your budget. How do you contain those costs? We ask benefits expert Rhett Bray.
We'll talk about wellness is how we can start to communicate the importance of wellness and that we give the people and the employees the opportunities to do things that will help them to become healthier. We start to educate them on the importance of annual physicals. We start to educate them on preventative care. Women do this quite well. Men have a tendency to wait till body parts don't work and then they go, which can be late. And it's interesting, we take better care of our car. We change the oil. We see the lamp light comes on, and for a lot of us, we don't do the maintenance that we should do on a regular basis. That will identify a lot of issues that people have that now you can start to address either through medication, through exercise or diet. There are just a few key areas that you can identify that will drive these higher costs.
Okay, so we've heard the term before, treat your business like an investment. It'll be a lot easier to sell down the road. What exactly does that mean? We asked an expert, Don Berzin.
Many of us in the field encourage owners to look at their business as an investment. Some owners understand that concept, but many do not. I mean, for a number of them, they see their business as either a job, a cash machine, a passion, or an extension of who they are. And the term investment sounds a little too removed for them to relate to. And we also let it be known that a business is actually easier to sell when it has a passive ownership. I mean, an owner who is not personally critical to maintaining future cash flows. But let's face it, I mean, one of the last terms that ever come to mind when we think about most entrepreneurs is passive. You know, these people are doers, they make things happen, and sitting on the sidelines is not something that many of them want to do at any stage of their career.
At ExitCoachRadio.com, we're interviewing over 100 top advisors to get you one-minute tips, ideas, and precautions so you can be well-planned. We upload new content daily at 6 a.m. and 1 p.m. ExitCoachRadio.com. Come listen for a minute.
Why would you have a revocable living trust instead of a will? Here's attorney Matt Amaro.
One of the main reasons that you would consider doing a revocable trust versus just having a will is avoiding what we would call a probate process, which is a court proceeding to distribute a family estate, which can be very expensive and legal fees, court fees, and just involves a lot of court involvement that can be pretty painful. So by using a trust, you can get out of that. Now, if your assets aren't high enough, that's one way you may be able to avoid probate without a trust. And the other way is you may have assets that are able to pass to beneficiaries outside of a trust and outside of probate, even if you don't have a trust. But when you have real property, you usually won't be able to avail yourself of those two exceptions to staying out of probate.
How do most people decide it's time to start exit planning, and what's on their mind when they do? Here's Jim Immel.
Long-term is really interesting. I use the analogy of the light switch. Sometimes these business owners don't think about it, and then all of a sudden they wake up one day and they just want to turn the light switch off, and they go from being passionate 100% into the game, and then all of a sudden something starts feeling heavy. Maybe it's a personal situation that's happened, but they literally turn the light switch off. Most of the people that you and I work with, it's more like a dimmer switch. They just don't do it that quick. They do it over time. But what really a lot of them are thinking about is, how do I transition myself out of the leadership position, provide other people opportunity to get into that leadership position, so the business is being prepared to transition from a position of strength and not weakness.
People are nervous about stocks and bonds these days. What's the outlook for income real estate? We asked real estate expert Scott Tamkin.
I'm a firm believer that income property will grow wealth over time. And there are parts of Los Angeles where income property is still affordable. The west side of LA doesn't make a whole lot of sense, but there are parts of LA where there are still opportunities. And I firmly believe that, particularly in some of the outlying areas, the gentrification will continue and people will want to rent in those areas, particularly as public transportation expands. People have some extra money. They're looking to invest in income property. I would say good strategy might be to join up with others who are doing the same. There are some crowdfunding sites that offer some opportunities to do that, but I would be careful just jumping in and talk to an expert in the multifamily business. I think over time it will prove to be lucrative.
Protecting your assets is important, but when you do it is even more important. Here's attorney Harry Barth.
A very important component to understand is that, as with all business deals, asset protection being just one of them, is to be able to settle a proposed claim within reasonable limits. It's very, very difficult to do that if you're in jeopardy of losing your home, losing your business, and losing your life savings. So I think that it's important that asset protection is granular. We look at the various components. We take into consideration all of the goals and objectives of our particular clients. And there's not one size fits all. Every situation is different. Every background is different. Every family makeup is different. Every business transaction is different.
What's the best way to use Twitter and other social media? We asked expert Tim Templeton.
I just had a friend ask me today, I don't really get Twitter. What is the value? And I said, you know, it's two things. It's self-promotion, or business promotion in this case, and it's research. So if you want people to know who you are and what you're doing, and you create content, you create blog content, you want people to see it, one of the best ways to get it out in front of people is to send out an announcement using Twitter. Likewise, if you're trying to find people in your ecosystem, your business, the analysts, the resellers, the potential partners, you can find them by their activity on Twitter. You can interact with them. You can follow them. You can retweet things that they're sending. And you can create a relationship that way, which is a lot easier than it used to be.
Hey, everybody. It's Bill Black, the Exit Coach from the Exit Coach Radio Show. One of the questions I get asked the most is, how do I grow the value of my business? I'm so busy working in it, I need to work on it. So we've created a special report for you on 10 tips to grow the value of your business. Just text the word DRIVERS to 44222 to get a special free report right to your inbox. That's DRIVERS to 44222. Text DRIVERS to 44222.
Thank you for listening to Exit Coach Radio.